Well, it's a good guavalicious morning this morning. It's no time for yawning or you may miss out on your guava. If you are a Bahamian, here's something that they didn't put in the manual for y'all youngsters. I know they stopped printing the manual. I don't know what happened to government printing office, but there used to be a manual where you could find everything you needed to know to be a good Bahamian. They stopped printing it. They stopped talking about it. They stopped sharing. It's like the Royal Readers. You can't find it nowhere. And they even stopped talking the stories. But here is rule number 745 in the handbook, How to Be a Bahamian. If you're a Bahamian, every morning, the crack of dawning, when you wake up, it's your duty to go out and check the fruit trees nearest to you. Mm-hmm. See what drop in the nested. See what needs to be protected from the ants. There's billions of those ants. And you think you could just leave one little guava or soursop on the ground till you get back from work? No, sir. Those animals never stop waking. They never stop reclaiming what is theirs. It's us. We are the thieves. We are the ones taking their food supply without asking their permission, without considering their considerations, how they ration their fruit over the summer, their food source. But again, rule number 1485, if you was a real Bahamian, every morning when the sun is dawning, you got to get up and check to see what fall. Not the number, but the number of fruit that hit the ground this morning. Guys, it's Tuesday, the 29th of August, 2023, and you are on the clock with Aaron Green. Joining me this morning is Mr. Mark Palmer. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Good morning, Aaron.
You must have known what mood I was in when I got here, Mr. Palmer. I want to say thank you once again for blessing the studio with those delicious guavas. Thank you.
Imagine that the big guavas came from a tree that's only 3 years old.
You mean a guava that is almost the size of my head?
Yeah. 3 years old, I planted that tree, and already throwing off huge guavas.
Now, Mr. Palmer, who cultivates that tree? Who gardens that tree? Who sings to that tree at night? Is it you, or is it your wife, or is it your children? Because one of y'all got to work for the Ministry of Agriculture.
Well, it definitely ain't my children.
They're
on TikTok.
One of y'all need to go and work for the Ministry of Agriculture. There's something special about your yard. When we do...
But when you look at these, and I'm not even sure if guava is indigenous, but when you look at trees like the guava, the breadfruit, mango, the pear trees, they require very little work. You know, you just need to give them water when they're smaller and, fertilize them. That's basically it. Now, citrus, that's another thing. I've never really been successful with citrus. That's a much harder thing to do. But, you know, when you look at breadfruit, you can make flour with it. You could bake it. You could do all kinds of things. You make chips with them.
You make candies,
French fries,
ice cream, frozen pies.
It grows like a weed. I have a tree that's 30 foot tall. I planted that 5 years ago. I had a breadfruit that was 10 pounds that came off it. So things like that, we should be able to grow, especially guava. I mean,
So two things. Guava requires no cultivation. If you're growing lots of guava trees, you have to be very careful that they don't get infected. There's a worm-esque thing where they'll get worms, and then the tree is very hard to recover from that. The reason we don't see lots of guavas around is because we have a vibrant guava duff industry here, and people don't wait for guava to get to market. They go to the farmer and they secure their guava a season ahead of time to ensure, that they could hit their projections for the next year. People pay in school fee on guava duff in this town. Breadfruit now, one of the difficulties with sort of promulgating, right, like spreading the word, the message, and growing more breadfruit, cultivating breadfruit and creating breadfruit farms, is it's very difficult to germinate, to plant a breadfruit tree. Because of the way that it, my agricultural, and so it's very difficult to reproduce a breadfruit tree. They grow like weeds. They will grow themselves because it's the way that they grow, right? And there's there are two ways to grow breadfruit. One is to get the root system, right? Like to cut out a piece of the root.
I just bought the plant.
Sorry, there are three easy ways to grow a breadfruit tree. One is to go $20. To a professional, yeah. right, who has put the work in. The other is by catching a piece of the root system. Mm-hmm. And the third is a technique developed, I think, by a Caribbean man in Texas University. I think it's Prairie View. But I can't tell you all the secret. It's one of my secrets that I ain't gonna let go right now. One day we can have that show. We talk about
it. Yeah, they do
it.
Them. I forget the exact technology, but you make them in the lab. That's how a lot of the, you know, bananas, pineapple, it's made in a propagated
in a lab. I can't afford no lab. I can't afford no lab, Mr. Palm. I talk about technique I could do in the bush. These are all techniques you could do in the bush without a lab. A lab requires electricity.
Well, there's one other issue. Mm-hmm. Getting up into that tree and twisting it.
Yeah.
And getting it off.
That's why for a lot of our fruit crops, to take it to the next level in terms of industry requires the addition of a little bit of technology, mm-hmm. right? Tamarind is very difficult to pick. Big dilly tree, difficult to get out to those limbs. And so it's time that we start investing in cherry pickers mm-hmm. and climbers and bucket trucks, right? So that we can really take advantage of all of the food sources that are available to us. I was about to say, when the Ministry of Agriculture, Marine Resources, and Family Island Affairs conducts its next agricultural survey, I go let them know where your yard is, Mr. Palmer. We need to get that documented.
Do you know, I grew a soursop from a seed,
mm-hmm.
and it's 4 years old, and it's the second year it's given me soursop. Not a lot, but like two or three, four. But one was at least 10 inches long.
Yeah. Listen.
And that was from a seed, you know, and we just propagated that from a seed. We were like 3 months, and then we put it in the ground, and boom.
All right. Yeah. Look here. I'm glad we had this conversation mm-hmm. this morning. Most of all, it was sparked by some guava you gave me. So I'm extremely glad. And once again, thank you, Mr. Palmer. I had some heavy things on my mind when I came into the station this morning, and I didn't really want to talk about them. But here are some things that we're going to talk about. I had the fortune of running into a massive traffic backlog yesterday twice on East Bay Street. The first time I diverted, I got to where I was going. I had to come back into town, and I figured it had to have been clear by the time 30, 45 minutes later, close to an hour later, it must have been clear, but it was not clear at all. So I found myself stuck in lines of traffic, and I figured, let's just push through, be patient, make your way through. Well, to my surprise, there was roadworks going on East Bay Street, just immediately west of Poop Deck. Half of me was upset, but half of me was glad that they finally came to attend to whatever was causing that pothole, the hole in the road in the northernmost lane heading east on East Bay Street. It was about time. I figured out it was water and sewerage, really, because there was a water and sewerage truck behind me that was attempting to force its way out of traffic, but it was about to create an even bigger block in the intersection. So then I called Royal Bahamas Police Force, because I thought, when you have traffic issues, you're supposed to call the police, because all police are traffic officers that are stunned, like completely and totally taken off guard when people, residents, citizens would call into 911 and say, hey, perhaps you can send officers to attend to these intersections because people are ignoring traffic controls. Sometimes citizens call before there's an emergency. Y'all like to wait until there is an emergency. Sometimes citizens can sense that something is happening or about to happen. And they call the police to say, hey, it's not an emergency yet, but if you continue to allow these hundreds and hundreds of people to make the decisions on their own in this frustrated state, we will have an emergency very soon. I want to apologize to the police officer in 911 office that I obviously stunned and offended with the suggestion that it would be police that would come out and enforce traffic controls. I want to apologize because I am the problem. And I say this sincerely. I expect too much. That expectation was far beyond the realms of sensibility. Why? Because I'm constantly watching and witnessing police officers observe and ignore major breaches in traffic controls every day. I apologize because I thought that every police officer, particularly those who are assigned to drive a vehicle, go through a driving test. These are things for which I take responsibility for. I am the ignorant one.
I remember when I was in a car with
Mark,
you, right?
Why you don't let me apologize to the police?
And I remember you saw something. I can't remember what it was, but it was an infraction. There was a police officer standing right on the corner. You rolled your window down, went, "Officer," and you explained to him what was going on. He just shrugged his shoulders, right? He looked at you, shrugged his shoulders.
Yeah, it's me. That was the moment when I should have realized that my expectations are the ones that are throwing everything out of whack. It's me. I want to apologize to all of y'all on the road who feel like I just wasting time getting frustrated at nothing because y'all are just driving perfectly fine. I want to say to the gentleman that almost killed me as I was leaving Johnson Road yesterday afternoon, I don't know, if you put on your turn signal to turn onto Johnson Road and you slow down and a car exits Johnson Road, at the moment that you don't you think you should just slow down? What do you think you should do? You should blow your horn and then try and blast past me before I could get out the corner? I just want to know, sir. I want to thank you for using your turn signal, but then I want to say forget that because it turns out that was a mistake and you were obviously hitting the windshield wiper. Maybe you were dropping your phone, trying to catch it before it dropped. It's my bad. It's my bad for expecting that when people use the turn signal, they're actually going to use it, like they're actually going to turn. That was my bad. I want to apologize to all of y'all because it's my expectations that are out of whack. Silly me expecting the police to enforce traffic controls. And more importantly, I want to apologize to the Ministry of Transport and the Bahamas Taxi Cab Union and to all taxi drivers. I didn't know that y'all could turn right on red. I didn't know. I didn't know that y'all were obviously authorized to turn right on red. I didn't know that you could get a taxi plate and keep a taxi plate despite constantly and frequently breaching every traffic control possible. I didn't know it was possible. And once again, I apologize.
Think how much money the Treasury could take if they had a couple of officers at that corner of Mackey Street and Shirley Street. They could take in thousands, exactly what you're saying.
Every
right
day.
Now. Yeah.
However, here's someone I'm not going to apologize to. They are Minister of Public Works. I cannot apologize today. I have to call for your resignation. Things are just falling apart. Those potholes that y'all just fixed a couple of months ago, they are potholing again.
Wow.
Road signs are not being replaced. Patelco, BPL, water and sewerage are in a mess. I wanted to say an array, but that's not what I'm trying to convey. They're in a mess. So, guys, for calling for the resignation for the Minister of Public Works. I'm not going to tell you all about the almost head-on collision on my way back west yesterday on the Eastern Road because
I'm not coming in a car with you again. I think that's it.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I think I'll pass.
I get the impression, I want to apologize, because obviously it's my fault that I'm getting this impression. I'm getting the impression that most drivers aren't paying attention to anything on the road but their own thoughts. Because we're well past the point where people say, oh, you looking for things. No, the Royal Bahamas Police Force is supposed to be looking for these things. I just happen to observe them because I have an insurance agent that constantly reminds me of my duty to others on the road. Anyway, good morning. What a time. What a time. Joining us in studio today is Tenille Burrows. As we get the show started, we're going to be talking about Burrows for Elizabeth. Tenille Burrows has launched her candidacy, her campaign for the, let me get this correct, the 2026 general election. Before we get the show started, the on-the-clock sand dollar trivia giveaway. Every day for the next 2 months, we'll be giving away sand dollars to digital wallet holders. Every week, players can win $30 in sand dollars. To be eligible to win, you must have a digital wallet and you cannot be a winner already. When you call in, give the producer your name and number, your wallet information. If you answer the question correctly, don't hang up. We're going to transfer you back to the producer to confirm you gave him your wallet information and you have not won the competition before. Listeners are restricted to one transfer for the duration of the competition. You can only win. Here's the first question of the day. The Gumbe drum is a membranophone. It's a new fancy word, a membranophone. What type of membrane is used to make the Gumbe drum traditionally? What type of membrane is used to make the Gumbe drum? First question of the day, numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720, toll-free for people in the Bahamas, but not in New Providence. Text line powered by BTC, 422-GR96, that's 422-4796. Good morning, caller, calling to answer the trivia question.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, and good morning to your co-host.
Good morning. Good morning. Have you won the competition before?
Oh, no, ma'am, I haven't.
All right, I'm ready for your answer.
I'm hoping I'm right. It's the goat skin?
It is. The membrane used to make the Gumbe drum is the goat skin. Thank you very much, ma'am. I transfer you back to the producer. Make sure you give him your cell phone number and your wallet information.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for calling. Let me throw out the second question very quickly since we are here. There you go. Second question of the day. The glass window bridge separates which two bodies of water? The glass window bridge separates which two bodies of water? I wish I could get a glass window bridge to separate my feelings from my expectations. Indeed, indeed. Numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720. Again, the text line powered by BTC, 422-GR96. I got a texter here. Texter, send me your wallet information if you haven't won before to qualify your winning answer. Wait, that ain't the winning answer, texter. Yeah, that ain't the winning answer. You're right, you ain't win. You ain't win. For texters, include your wallet information in the text to qualify as a correct answer. Again, we've heard Mr. Mark Palmer is joining us today on this World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer. And in studio is Ms. Tennille Burrows. Good morning, Ms. Burrows.
Good morning.
Say it again.
Morning this morning.
I could hear you.
Good. Cool.
Good, good.
Thanks for the guava, Mark.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. Look here, your first day as a politician again, and somebody giving you things and not asking you for things. How does it feel being back?
I appreciate your contribution to the campaign.
And I didn't get no T-shirt. No.
She ain't print no T-shirt yet. Anyway, Miss Burrows, last week you CT26 general election in the constituency now known as Elizabeth, right?
Yes.
So my question is, why would you start so early? Because that's 3 years away, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm actually genuine in my effort. It's not a farce and it's not a reactionary thing, except for the fact that the crimes against children that we've been having rampant in this country for the past 15, 10, I don't know how many years or so since I became an activist has spurred me on to saying, now this is the time I need to speak out and be a voice for the children and vulnerable groups. That's pretty much it. I don't really have an issue with being the first one to announce candidacy officially. I like doing things first and being a trendsetter. So I think it's also an advantage in terms of me being genuine, like I said, and I'm good with it. Like, whatever may come, I'm ready to tackle.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, so the next thing you would want to see is like a manifesto. You spoke about children and the rights of children. Do you have like a articulated manifesto of what you're going to be standing for.
What your platform is.
Yeah.
So obviously child protection, which is the reason I'm at sea so early, as you call it, is my top priority. And it's what I've fought for the past 15 years. When I first heard in 2009 that there may have been a five-month-old baby girl that was raped and died. If you Google me and then anything related to child protection or the organization I founded in 2014, Rise Bahamas, you'll see all of the issues that we've fought for and won and those that we're still fighting for.
Absolutely. A bit of a follow-up question to the last question. I'm a proponent of not just announcing your candidacy early, but establishing yourself as a part of a community, right? And with transparency. So people will know why you're there and they'll know what you're for the next election. But are there any, do you see any cons of announcing this early? One of the things I think about is that potential candidates and candidates with no real platform may latch on to the work that you generate over the next 3 years.
Like I said, you could Google Tada Burrows or Rise Bahamas and see the work that's already been done. So it's no way that they could hijack that.
Take it on as their own.
Well, you know what? If they take it on, so what? Good. Let's go.
I was about to say.
People promoting child protection, let's go. So I don't want to just say that it's only child protection. That is my primary platform item. Also, I'm definitely going to be working on creative industry development as well as constituency empowerment.
All right. Now, here's two words I didn't hear you use, local government. Will the local government platform that you had been working on as a part of Rise Bahamas now be a part of your Burrows for Elizabeth campaign?
I will support Rise Bahamas and other groups that are calling for local government implementation in New Providence. That will not be a part of my platform, but I will show. And I am a proponent of local government, as are people like Nicolette Bethel, Ed Fields, Pat Ramming, and others. So obviously, if I have the opportunity to try to help facilitate the implementation of local government on New Providence, I will absolutely do that. And as a member of parliament in the future, that would make my job a lot more focused, where legislation and issues related to the law we can handle in the House of Assembly, and we'll have the mayors and council people focusing on the constituency level concerns, most of which you normally think would be infrastructure, road works, things of that nature, but also stuff like child protection down the line once the local government in New Providence is established. Every issue you can think of, local government should be able to address to some degree.
Absolutely. So is this a return to politics or an expansion of your advocacy?
It's a means to an end, quite frankly. I'm not interested in, well, I lie. When I was a little girl, my hero used to be who? Celine and Oscar Pinlan. And I was Duke because, I don't know, he was just the most popular person I knew and he was well respected. I was probably 4 years old and they told me what he did. And I was like, I want to be like Celine and Oscar Pinlan. Just for the mere fact that I felt like he did a lot at that time in terms of transformation, in terms of the national trajectory. So I can't, you know, after that, next year we have a recording with my sister and my parents. I wanted to be a teacher. So I think in this capacity, when I talk about constituency empowerment, I get to be a teacher. I teach them about the roles of an independent member of parliament, how it can work, the advantages and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So why run as an independent? Why not seek, you know, one of the established parties? Because that might give you, would that not give you more of a voice or more of a chance?
I believe that the system of government we have and the two-party system, so the parliamentary democracy that we inherited from our colonial past needs to be torn down, and the two-party system needs to be torn down. I'm not here to play. So if I'm going to stand out and make a difference, I have to actually be different and not conform to what people think that the standards I have to. And they would say, oh, you can infiltrate from inside. I'm not interested in infiltrating from inside. I'm a starter, not a joiner. So I'd rather start something entirely new, a new system of government, a new way of doing politics in this country. And the existing two parties, the FNM and PLP, their time is up.
There you go.
Okay.
What's more important to you for 2026? Is it winning a seat or engaging and operating a successful campaign?
I think the campaign is most important because obviously I got 3 years of campaigning to do. So whatever I say or do or demand of the government over the next 3 years is my body goals. Whether you choose me or someone else or you decide to go with the two-party politics, I mean, that's up to you at the end of the day. No sweat off my back. But the work, I'm a worker. So that's the highlight for me. To have 3 years of a platform and to be able to go to someone's door, not as an activist or advocate, because they ain't open their door for no activist or advocate. They open their door when they see you want to run for their constituency.
Mm-hmm. You said something, I wanted you to repeat that. It's like you are introducing a new political model. You say, listen, I've started early. I've got 3 years to prove to you why you should vote for me, which is completely opposite to the current political culture, which is you impress a party, show a party that A, you could generate money, and B, you have established a presence in the community without any real policy promises, without any real substantial ideas that you can guarantee that once you're elected, realize and actualize. And if you impress the party, then you get on a ticket, and then you go back into the community to campaign again. It seems like a completely different political model. So here's another question. What can you achieve as a politician that you can't or couldn't achieve as an advocate?
Well, first of all, the media, just like I said, Bahamians ain't gonna open their door to no advocate. They go open their door to someone saying, I'm running in your constituency, here are my plans.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So the media access, having a televised national media platform in the House of Assembly every week, presenting my own bills for debate in the House, which is a thing.
Yes.
Every single member of parliament has an opportunity to present bills and amendments for consideration. And people don't realize that. The general public doesn't realize. Voting on legislation, I'll be able to do. Sitting on a parliamentary committee, such as the Public Accounts Committee, having a constituency allowance to use of $150,000, those sorts of things are what I can accomplish in the House.
Absolutely. We can get right back to that. I see we have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You calling to answer the trivia question?
I do. Commend Tada for running.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Graham.
Graham Weatherford. You ran before, right?
2017.
That's right, and I did in 2012. I don't think the country was fully understanding the power that the independent possesses at that time.
Right.
But before I show you that, you know, I spoke to it from 2008 on another radio show that I used to host. Ask them this, Tada. 50 years of the same two parties, and you do not have one hospital. Everybody else got what they wanted, correct? Big hotels, management of our airport, you know what you've seen go up around here. Billions of dollars worth of things for foreigners. Well, we got a job and not even a hospital. Now, if you care about me, you would have given me a hospital. It's only $100 million.
Not just a hospital. Many other things.
Could have put it in.
Yeah, many other things.
Yes, of course. Aaron, but I focus on healthcare because if you don't want me healthy, and instead you did even something more egregious, you put tax on my food. Both of you. So, ta-da. And if they want someone who didn't get them a hospital, and they leave you with a crazy. We actually taxed women's menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You, the women, pay 10% to have a menstrual cycle on feminine products. I think that's just egregious.
No, we don't pay 10% to have a menstrual cycle.
No, but to have products that assist you.
We pay 10% so that nobody knows that we have a menstrual cycle. That's why.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I always like your spin on it.
Yes, sir.
You know, the independent changed the history of the country.
True.
Absolutely.
Because if you didn't have Brennan and Folks, who both fought independent in labor, both thinking independently of the two-party system at the time, when there was a tie between the UBP and the PLP, two men changed the course
of
the nation.
Absolutely.
Isn't that crazy?
Absolutely.
And if Tada wins, if I run independent and win, and if five other people run independent and win, and the two parties lose, one of them loses by four seats, do you know what we are? We're the tiebreakers. We're the people that get to go into the House of Assembly and say, hey, you're going to fix women's rights.
Thank
and if you,
Graham.
Don't do it, we're going to side with the opposition tomorrow morning. And every day we can have them flip-flopping and we control. What? Ta-da. If they don't want you or me or any other independent in this election, then they're happy with the tax and no hospital. I leave you all with that.
Thank you, Graham. Thank you very much. We missed a couple of callers. Please call in because we still got that question on the table. I see we got a caller, producer. The question, second question for the day, the glass window bridge separates which two bodies of water? Good morning, caller.
Hello.
Hey, good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Calling to answer the question?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I'm ready for your answer.
I think one's calm and one's rough.
I mean, those are the temperaments of the bodies of water. But if you ask a woman her name, if you say, what are those two women's names? And you say, one's calm and one's rough. It could be a problem in the house. I need the actual names of the bodies of the water. You got a couple seconds to get my answer. What are the names of the bodies of water that meet at the glass window bridge? Still there? 3 seconds. I give you 3, 4, 5, 6. If you get the answer, call back, please. Caller. Got an answer by text. Got a correct answer. There is a correct answer, people. Not just the answer is not where we is go to chill out, where we is go to catch big fish. That ain't the answer. I see we got another caller, producer. Let's go to that caller. Good morning, caller.
Hey, Aaron, I'm from Eleuthera. It's the Atlantic Ocean.
Hold on, pause. You have a sand cash, you have a sand dollar wallet?
Oh, no, but I have the answer, though.
No, you can't give me the answer. I mean, if everything in the world, hold on.
Yes.
If everything in the world, Graham,
I won't answer.
You, of all people, to give me this answer. But you ain't got no sand dollar wallet, so you can't give me this answer.
I won't answer, but I don't want to hear Caribbean Sea in any...
Man, look here.
Cancel.
The correct answer is Atlantic Ocean and the Caribbean Sea. Graham.
No.
That is the correct answer.
No, the correct answer is the Atlantic Ocean and the Bahama Banks, the leeward side. No Caribbean Sea touches.
Graham, all water is water. All water is water. The Caribbean Sea sits in the Atlantic Ocean. It's all water is water. And a bank. What's a bank? A bank is solid. I mean, my bank, I don't know if my bank is pretty solid right now, but banks typically are solid. One more caller. Good morning, caller. Hey, good morning, Brandon.
Tada, what's that?
Hey, what do you say?
All right, yeah, man. Aaron.
Yes.
I'm calling you this morning for you to speak on that diplomatic comment you had made yesterday when I was explaining something. Let me explain it today so you could understand what I'm saying.
You saying I was being too polite or I didn't understand it properly?
I don't...
Because I appreciate what... It appeared to me you were saying that those who have a duty of care to ensure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted are not living up to their statutory and contractual duties as employees for the state, that they're enabling people to squat, right, by giving them access to power that technically they should not have access to. And what I followed it up with is that sometimes people in their heart feel a way, and they...
Yeah, but my point is,
yeah,
those people, immaterial of how you feel, record shows that those people are thieves and murderers, which they had already done and still doing, okay? And and I'm not running, or my family are not running a charity organization, okay? And they are bigoted. So, you know, I don't have the rights to consider them other than considering them to be moved
Right.
You properties in which they are squatting on.
I got you, Brayman.
And that's my prerogative.
No, man, absolutely. And I didn't say anything that suggested that you couldn't or shouldn't feel that way, Brayman. I didn't at all. In fact, what I said was that sometimes people in the positions of authority feel bad for people. They feel sympathy for people and they don't follow their contractual obligations, right? Because they feel bad for people. Brayman, you need a lawyer.
Well, like I said, the lawyer in which I had went into the House of Assembly.
No, you need a good lawyer. That wasn't a lawyer. That was a politician in waiting, Brayman. So I don't want you to think I'm being dismissive, okay? But that's a politician in waiting. You need a real lawyer. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
A pleasant good morning, Miss Green. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you, Sparky. How are you doing?
Fighting back.
Good, Sparky.
I hear people talking about the hospital.
Well, no, we're not talking about the hospital at all.
No, I just mentioned something because something happened to me this morning. In fact, it happened twice. When we talked about we're trying to build a new central bank.
Sparky, we're talking to Tenille Burrows about her candidacy and Elizabeth.
Yeah, I haven't heard from Tenille for a little while. I was going to get to Tenille if you give me a moment to say something that you pull up to the hospital and you can't get out of your car because you cannot walk, and you ask the security guard if you can please bring a wheelchair. And they tell you they don't have a wheelchair. And somebody's big, brand-new hospital, or it looks like the brand-new, the new section. They don't have a wheelchair for somebody who can't walk.
Well, Sparky, they created the critical care unit at the hospital and then turned it into offices. Right from then... See, I'm mad at you, Sparky. I'm mad at you because when I was sitting here rowing and critiquing severely political parties for doing foolishness, you was following political parties. That's years ago that they spent millions of dollars to upgrade the hospital to create a critical care unit for us to find out they got all kind of critical care equipment not being used. And they got all kinds of offices that are not available for bed space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I am not dissing you, Sparky, because you're in a real medical situation where you need real results right now. I get it. Right now, though, we're talking to Ms. Burrows.
And I'm interested, because I've always liked independent candidates. You know, there's some good advantages for being independent. You don't have to toe party line. You can be more flexible. You can reach marginalized communities, which, you know, the party normally doesn't reach. So there are lots of benefits for it that I can see, but there are also disadvantages. And one of the disadvantages is really how do you get your funding, you know, your sponsorship, and the other one being not having sort of a party mechanism behind you. Do you see those as disadvantages?
Well, the funding would have to come once people who decide that they want to support are interested in supporting in that way. The Obama campaign, as far as I understand, was through people given $5 here and there. So that would add up if you're talking about investing in a campaign that you believe in. So I'm not really concerned about that part. The other part about was exactly what did you ask again?
Right. You know, that kind of support that the two parties have within they have their constituency offices and mechanism, you know, their whole mechanism.
Well, let's say Graham runs and wins, I run and win, a handful of independents run and win. The benefits that we have are that if the two parties, like in 67, were at a deadlock in terms of the same number of seats, one for each side, so PLP get 10, FNM get 10, those handful of independents now have the power in terms of deciding which of the groups is going to become government. So there's now room for negotiation, room for bipartisan and collaboration. So you have more of a coalition government framework. Mm-hmm. That would be advantageous, in my opinion.
I can definitely see that. But what about political influence? You know, when you have that whole system behind you, you know, you have more political influence. Whereas if you're on your own, there may be a thought that you wouldn't be able to. You know, you talked about legislation, creating legislation, but it's kind of tougher doing it on your own than without having a party behind you.
I would venture to say that I could, in 2 weeks, get some proposed amendments to legislations that I want to see and pitch that to somebody who's in the House to say, you want to adopt this as your own?
And with the operation of the Freedom of Information Act, an independent would then have greater access to information that should be public record to inform policy creation, legislation review, creation of bills, all of that stuff. I want to frame the question slightly differently. As an MP, you have to balance a number of due number of people and things, right? And so as an MP, as an independent candidate, right, as an independent MP, how do you intend or how will you balance your duty to these multiple things? A, your duty to the Constitution and the House of Assembly and the Rules of Parliament. B, your duty to party, if you're part of a party, or your political principles for independence, right?
Hold on, you're going too fast. Like, let me answer the first two, and then you come
back.
Because
it's a balancing act, right? And then we could go to it piece by piece. Your duty to your constituents, right? Your duty to the people of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Your duty to a PM in a cabinet if you are a part of a party or as an independent, you join a coalition. And then lastly, your duty to your donors, if you've established any sort of duty in that relationship.
So which one are we starting with?
Whatever one you want to start with.
Constitution, I think that's the one you started
with,
right?
That's the first one.
Yeah.
Right. So my duty to the Constitution and to the House of Assembly, I'm not really sure what you're asking me, but I'll play by the rules until such time that we tear down that current system of government.
Mm-hmm.
So my duty will be to get in there and tear it down.
Right. Like, for instance, we find a number of MPs and cabinet ministers having difficulty balancing these things, right? So we see Glenys Hannah-Martin in response to an announcement of approval by Chester Cooper, the RCI deal. Glenys Hannah-Martin gets up and says, hey, I haven't changed my mind. I stated prior to this point that I oppose it. And I'm holding that same position. People got up then and said, hey, hold on. The Prime Minister got a fight. She has breached her duty to the PM and to Cabinet, right? And while Glenys may be saying, hey, I may have breached the duty to the PM and Cabinet, but I feel my duty to A, my personal political principles, B, my duty to my constituents and what it is I've said to them that I will represent in the House, and maybe even she feels duty to the people of the Bahamas, right? That was a balancing act, and people say, oh, she didn't balance that well. She should have been fired. And others would say, well, she balanced it well because she wasn't fired. And so that's what I mean when I ask candidates, how are you going to balance your duty to these multiple things? We see a Kirk Cornish in Abaco that got up and said, hey, I am the PM of Abaco. I don't know what he was balancing there. I can't imagine that his constituents appreciated that in the grand scheme of party politics and how it operates in the Bahamas. I can't imagine that the residents of the island appreciated the statement. But was it a balancing act with his own personal political position, right? And so that's why.
Well, thank you for raising that name. I look forward to when they have a by-election in the House of Assembly in the near future. I would like to jump to my duty to the people. If or when the time comes, if it takes the next election or later and we win the opposition as, let's say, a group of independents or a new third party, and then at some point we win the government, in whatever time frame, the next election, 10 years from now, or 12, 13 years from now, whatever. The first thing I would do if I were to be a leader of that party, that new party, and become the prime minister, change the system of government to something that we craft on our own that is not what we inherited from our colonial past, looking at democracy, looking at meritocracy, looking at proportional representation and all that type of stuff, and create our own Bahamian system. And then the next thing I would do is limit the powers of myself as the prime minister. Mm-hmm. So that would seem asinine in some circles, but I believe that we need all hands on deck. We have so much power because absolute power corrupts.
What type of limitations are you looking at?
I was told by, what his name is? Carl Bethel. when the PLP were in power around 2014, when we started more forefront activism, he pulled me on the side and said, you know that we say we're a parliamentary democracy, but really we're a parliamentary dictatorship. I said, why do you say that? He says, the prime minister has all the power. I don't know what all the power means.
Don't mind that. That's what people say when they want to be.
So who has all the power?
That's what people say when they want to be prime minister. So there's another question. There's another scenario. A few years ago, we watched Loretta Butler Turner take control of the opposition in the House.
Yes.
Right? She took control of the opposition of the House. She essentially removed, with the six other members of the party, removed the sitting leader of the opposition.
Vote of no confidence.
With a vote of no confidence. The same thing could happen to a prime minister, right? The power to control the prime minister lies within the cabinet, lies within his party colleagues, House of Assembly with him. The equal among equals has a meaning, and it means that you could easily be an equal among equal in the back bench, right? Like, so there is power, but there are ways to control the prime minister, as heavy-handed as they may seem, right? Are you willing to risk the appearance of stability, right, to make a move as big as that? I remember about 10, maybe even 15 years ago, this letter just shown up on social media. It appeared to be purported to be some external investors speaking to a local wealth management company or something. And they were talking about the upcoming elections. And they say, look, yeah, man, everything cool. And places, but these play them, they seem like it's a contentious. It's like, hey, everything cool. This is the Bahamas. No matter who wins the election, there's going to be stability. There's going to be political and governmental stability, so you have nothing to worry about. A move as big as removing a prime minister may, external gaze, appear to be extreme instability. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to take that risk as a leader?
Yes.
All right. So how then in your campaign will you... Even at the MP level, right? You just one independent focusing on MP.
Yeah, let's start with that.
As a part of that campaign, do you have a foreign policy portfolio or platform?
No.
Not yet. Okay, I added the not yet.
Let me ask, not yet. I told you what my platform was. I'm not trying to be all things to all people. I'm one person. My platform is child protection, advocacy, constituency empowerment, and creative industry development. Whoever's an expert in foreign matters, come run. Join the hummingbirds. I'm a hummingbird, and I'm going to ask, do you allow me to tell that story as to why I call myself a hummingbird? And y'all come deal with that platform issue. I'm not trying to take on everything.
What's the likelihood that Burrows for Elizabeth will morph into a party by the next election with like-minded candidates or advocates joining you in other constituencies and building other parts of the platform?
Well, that's the goal, right? So I lead by example. The more coverage I get in terms of what I put out there, in terms of issues that I think are pertinent right now, the more donations I get for my campaign, the more support and in-kind, you know, sort of stuff I get from my campaign, people would begin to see, oh, this is a real thing. I can do this as well. If Tenille Tadar Burrows could do it, I could do it too.
I get a text here. Are you a part of the COI? Do you intend on joining the COI? Are you, and then I'm going to add on, follow up to this last question, are you open to creating a formal co-election?
No. Okay. I will vet, get biographies, resumes, look at the police and criminal record of anybody who says they want to join the Hummingbirds and be an independent candidate. And at such time as we have enough, we will fly.
I get
and
you.
We will start what we need to start. I'm not going to play around. This is not a game. This is a very serious thing going on in this country right now. And we need people who may have historically been uninterested in entering what we call a dirty game, in quotations, politics. You can do it. I'm here to help and guide the way. Let's go.
Do you think any of the parties are scared?
Oh, they scared to die, them coming, the hummingbirds coming. Oh, they scared.
Because you got heckled, right? When you announced your candidacy, right? One of the political parties heckled you.
I will not be moved.
Have you had a response?
I am not intimidated by anyone. You could be the gosh darn prince of Egypt. You could be the queen of England. I don't care who you are. I am not intimidated.
The chairman of the FNM responded and denounced the behavior of those people who were wearing PLP paraphernalia when they, I wouldn't say attacked, right? I see it as a form of violence, right? An act of violence. Have you had a response from any part of the PLP machinery, the prime minister, the chairman of the party, denouncing the activities of those people purporting to be PLP members?
No, I have not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I got one last question I want to throw out there. It's a rough question, Tenille. They say, I have a question for Tenille. You're talking about being PM. Are you married? If you are not married, are disqualified of being PM? I want to say this
can
here.
Can I say jackass on the radio?
No, thanks. You can't.
I'm not answering that.
Too late.
No, I'm going to answer it. Dear Texter, I was the one who was talking.
Where does
about
it say that in the Constitution?
The PM.
Why was that a hard question? That's not a question.
No, it's hard for me.
That's just assonance.
It's hard for me to ask because it's so rude and poorly constructed, but so obvious, right? And it manifests a bias that you have to force it into a conversation. Further to that, you tell me, Texter, I could be here for a few minutes after the show ends. Send me a text. You tell me how it is that you have shown your disgust and intolerance to the behavior of those who are married but still engage in activities and behavior that we all decry as unacceptable in our society. This focus on LGBT people, while y'all don't focus on those people who you know exist in these power structures and the activities they engage in regularly. Right? Next time you text me with a question like that, you tell me, what is your tolerance level for prime ministers that beat their wives? You do that for me.
Or MPs that rape their girlfriends.
You do that for me.
So let me just be quite frank. I ain't gonna lie to nobody. Nobody can ever call me a liar. I am what I am. And I'm probably one of the biggest, when you talk about people who are marginalized and disadvantaged, like black women in America, are like the biggest downtrodden minority. I am a young woman, unmarried, black, currently not rich, queer person in this country, and I will do exactly what you think you can do in terms of leadership, advocacy, or anything else. So if you want to come at me, come face to face and let me know what you got to say.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tenille, because you surely are not afraid to come face to face with the people. This has been On the Clock with Erin Green. I want to say thank you to my trivia winners. Again, remember, you can only win once. You guys have a great day. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. It's been Guavalicious. Thank you, producer, for your patience.
Thanks,
Guardian Radio AM is up next with C.A. Newry.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.